Good, thank you, Ben.
We ready to go?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so, you know, I was thinking, Ben, what you were saying, one of the natural patterns that you can see around the world is the productivity of any watershed is highest where? Where do you see that? Like when you think of a giant watershed, like the Mississippi watershed, or any of the major river systems, where do you have the highest productivity biologically? Down by the delta, correct? Further down. So where the water slows down, you have a lot more species diversity, and you have, like, the mangrove swamps are the most productive natural system in the world as far as biodiversity. When you go higher up in the stream, where things are higher in the steepness of the mountains, where the landform is more convex, you have faster moving water and you have less speciation. So it's a natural pattern that to get higher amounts or to increase your capacity to have fast carbon pathways building in your system, you need to slow the water down. And so I appreciate that. The understanding of that is crucial for us to have sustainable agriculture. We have to work with water and not see it as a separate aspect of what we're doing. And I also wanted to bring up, all these things you inspired me, Ben, was he talked about the elephant in the room. And how many of you have read Gilgamesh? Anybody read the Epic of Gilgamesh? It's a story that's 6,000 years old. It was done on clay tablets 6,000 years ago, but it was the story of really modern agriculture following, moving from the Bronze Age to the Steel Age. And when we started to get into steel to create cities, we saw that the amount of heat that was needed to forge steel needed to have a certain type of oils that were hotter to be able to make because bronze doesn't need as much heat. And so steel needed a lot more heat. So you saw the cedars around the Fertile Crescent start to be deforested. And you started to see the hilltops all around that region being deforested for steel to create the cities that followed. The Uruk, I think it was the city that was in that story. And you see that it's over 6,000 years the journey of soil degradation that is in kind of what we would consider our modern era. And so we can't reverse it really quickly, the entire system to rebuild the ecology, but we can do a lot of things. You know, what it takes to do nature, to do an inch of soil, to build an inch of soil might take 100 years. But what we've done is we've developed pathways that could increase the speed of that to where we can do that in one growing season. 1 year season, we can build an inch of soil. And I'm seeing that over and over and over again, even in dry land scenarios, through water harvesting and bringing it all together and creating living soils. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that as we move through these next few minutes, because we just have 10 minutes each. So living soil, we're not talking about dirt here. What we're talking about is a very complex ecology that is below our feet, but is completely and intricately linked to a lot of other complex systems, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But what we're finding just right off the bat is that soils that don't have living organisms in them, that aren't that don't have the tilth and the protection to be able to keep the soil organisms moving as a healthy ecology, you're finding that, you know, we can actually grow healthier, more nutritious food with the presence of soil biology. So when we start to think of nutrition and what we're growing, it's not a matter of how much bulk we're getting, but it's also how much nutrition is in the food. And if you want to increase the nutrition in the food quickly, it's to get the soil biology cruising and get it moving. And so I'll talk a little bit about how to do that. Here, there's a test plot that what we like to do is we like to show conventional agriculture. I don't even call it traditional. Conventional green revolution agriculture side by side with a very even simplified agroecology system, like we were talking about the three sisters, and even complicate that a little bit more. But to show side by side production, what works and what's not, for local farmers to actually come and see soil building at work and to see the value that comes from it. So this is a system that's showing that exact the same amount of water, exact same solar aspect, planted at the same time,
intended in the same way, other than it's a more diverse system that's no tillage on the left, that hasn't been tilled in 11 years, and on the right is what everybody's doing, and it's filled with straggler. You can't really see that, but it's definitely, if that was somebody's crop at home, they would be really susceptible to not having a good crop at all, looking at that. And that's typically what people are doing there. With life in the soils, what we have to remember is that the soil is the living soil is an indicator of our healthy lithosphere, hydrosphere. Like our hydrological system is completely dependent upon healthy soils. And so what I do as a designer is I look at how nature builds soils. And then I try to mimic that in our agriculture systems and the systems that surround our agriculture systems to be able to create the most beneficial design for success for all the community and everything we're growing by creating healthy soils. So some of the things that you see when you have life in the soils, you have improved soil structure. Another thing I found as a farmer is that when I get the soil biology right, I don't have to worry so much about the chemistry. And that's a really hard thing for people to fathom. Like, well, what do you mean? You're not worrying about the pH? And yeah, you can shock the system with, you know, water that's 8.5 or, you know, and stuff that would, you know, cause some damage. But it's basically you start to see the soil biology helps to buffer extreme events by having healthy soil biology. So as far as resiliency is concerned, the biology in the soil is actually one of the ways that you can create some of the most resilient agricultural systems. You see that you have better water retention. So you can actually store water right where you need it. Without tanks, without drip irrigation, you're actually storing it, like Steve Moore was saying earlier today, how much water he could store. Like, you know, 3 inches of humus can store an inch of rain. And so if you can start to create the soils that can hold that and then not let it evaporate away through different managed evaporation strategies, you can actually have water far into the dry season and increase your, oftentimes into the next cycle of growing, where before they never had that, especially in dry land environments. You also see reduction in diseases. You see insect pests are eaten as eggs and larvae, so you see a lot of the insect pests actually become food for the system, rather than the other way around, when you have healthy living soils. So let me talk, there's a lot more to this, and I believe all of you are going to get all of our presentations, so I put a lot more on the tail end of all my presentations for you to look through if you get interested in it, some other resources and things. So this is a project that's one of the oldest permaculture projects in Africa. It's in Zimbabwe, a place called Chikupa Village. And it's a place that was deforested many, many, many years ago. And the springs dried up. The typical thing that happens when you deforest the tops of the hills, you get your springs below that start to dry up, and then you have to go downhill to get your water. So the last thing you want to do energetically is go downhill. When the water used to flow to you clean, you go down and get dirty water below you. And you bring the water back up with all that energy and usually cholera with it. And so this is exactly what happened here. And you started to see there was, once this healthy forest ecology was gone, the people, once the ecology started going unhealthy, in an unhealthy, imbalanced way, so did the people. And that's pretty much across the board. We start to see that. The ecology, people, we are a part of the ecology. We're not separate from it. So eventually it catches up with us. So what they did, and this is the same hill, over the course of the last 30 years, they've been developing this, and it's a project run by the people that are from that, and they built out a very complex system using earthworks like Ben talked about, and other strategies for water retention and water reticulation, which again, whenever you talk about water, you're always talking about nutrients as well. So it's a nutrient capture system, all of their earthworks. They increase the thermal mass in the system. So the more water you embody, the more carbon you have growing, the more plant life, the complex biology that happens in a system like that, the more thermal mass you have embodied in that system, which is a buffer to extreme events. It's like, you know, when you walk into a forest and it's really hot out, what do you feel when you get into the forest? It's usually cooler, isn't it? And vice versa, if it's really cold out, you walk into a forest, generally it's a little warmer. And it's that thermal mass quality. It's like what the ocean does for coastal climate. So you can actually buffer extreme events by creating thermal mass storages within your system. And that's what we should be doing everywhere. We also integrate animals. Every natural system that builds soils has animals in it. And every natural system has some form of, or I should say most natural systems have some form of ungulate that's working to actually create health in the soils rather than degrade it. And that's a management issue. I believe we need cows to actually help us to rebuild our soils and to rebuild our carbon, to sequester our carbon. We also are doing a lot of living fertility systems to build the soil. So our fertility is not something that we're importing, but we're actually growing it. And we're working with organic mulches, and we're growing a lot of the fertility itself, and we're using the animals to get our initial dump of nitrogen that we need to get our system up and running, in especially areas that have very low nitrogen. We're not tilling. We're doing a lot of perennial plants for nutrition as well. Because one of the things you do, you know, when you have a perennial food system, it doesn't take the same amount of energy. Once you planted it, it's there. It just needs tending. And you have nutrition that can come from that. So we do a lot of food forestry projects, which are soil building systems, multi-layered nutrition systems that have a lot of stability because of their thermal mass. We do integrated pest management, and we also are constantly looking at how to cycle waste into the system. So where there's waste streams, waste must equal food for it to be truly a permaculture system. So thinking about that, if you're bringing something into the system that can't eventually feed something, some microbe, if it can't feed the system, then or ourselves, then we don't want to involve it in the system according to the ethics of our design methodology. So that's an important part of this. We also are harmonizing with nature's succession process. And I don't have a lot more time, but that's the natural reparation and healing process that nature has when an avalanche comes through a landscape or a hurricane comes and wipes out areas. There's a natural process for succession to go back to a climax forest, and that's the thing we're usually fighting. That process is usually what we're fighting with all our biocides, all our persistent biocides. Rather than fight it, why don't we harmonize with it? Because it is a natural process. And when you push against natural process, what does it cost us? When you push against the natural process, what does it cost us? At the root level. It's energy. You know, try pushing a boulder uphill rather than going down. That's a natural process. It costs more energy. Same with succession. The cost of persistent biocides and all biocides to be able to stop the succession process, which is just trying to heal a damaged landscape, is a huge amount of energy. And that's why the Green Revolution takes 10 calories of energy to produce 1 calorie of food. It won't be maintained much longer. We have to shift and be more natural with it. So let me just flip through a couple slides here. This is a community project, the Chikupwa Village Community Project, using very simple tools that we made. We didn't need laser levels to find contour. We made simple A-frames. We did a lot of spring. There's a lot of spring rejuvenation work that's been done there. With the systems, again, like Ben was showing, slowing, spreading, and sinking the water, you can bring back springs. You can bring back the levels of water in the wells. It's not hard to do, actually. You just have to really know how to read the patterns in the landscape. And then creating systems that were buffers economically as well for the small boulder farmers, both from a nutritional standpoint, but also from having multiple crops that they could sell. So beneficial diversity was a big part of what we were doing. And just look, I love this. It's like that woman's stance right there. It's like, you know, I'm proud of this. Like, this is a place where people were on food aid, and now they're growing, they have their own stability within their farm. And I just really feel like this is something that I identify with. I feel the same way about the farms that my farm, as well as farms that I help with, that, you know, once you can get that kind of stability happening ecologically, and you have the production that's coming, that comes from healthy living soils, you have a security and you have a pride in what you're doing. And I know that that is something that a lot of people that we're working with are, they're beyond pride, they're just in survival and we're in triage. How do we get to the place where we're proud of how we live, where we live? And you don't have to be looking at someone in the West and saying, oh, you have a much better life, but it's like, no, this is, I have a good life and I'm doing this myself. So thank you so much.